I'm your host, Lorena, and this is Conversations on Death. On today's episode, I spoke to Elise Neiman Sider, who is an Emmy Award-winning TV producer and director with over 20 years of professional experience creating unscripted content and sharing compelling stories. She has a particular interest in end of life and recently completed a year-long course in contemplative care and end of life at the New York Zen Center. She's the founder of Mindful Films, a production company dedicated to documenting stories about perspective shifts, particularly those that arise in times of illness and end of life. She is currently in production on a documentary film about a woman confronting the end of life with a vibrant spirit and a reverent sense of humor. This particular film is called Riding Home, and it follows Carol, a horsewoman from Vermont who has terminal cancer, over the last several months of her life. On this episode, we basically talk about Elise's experience with documenting the end of life and capturing these stories, as well as we get to know Carol a little bit more and about her journey and confronting her own death and what this documentary is all about. If you would like to support Elise's post-production of this film, she has a Kickstarter going on until May 23rd of 2024, and you can do so by going to tinyurl.com/writinghomekickstarter. And if you're listening to this episode after that or after it's been released, please look for Writing Home, a documentary about Carol. Enjoy, guys. So, welcome, Elise. I'm so excited to have you on. Let's start by having you introduce yourself, what you do, why you're here.
Okay, sure. Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me. It's really an honor to be here. So, I'm an Emmy Award-winning director-producer. I've worked in television mostly for the last 20 years, but I've also done some stuff in film and digital content. I'm particularly interested in end-of-life stories, so filming stories of really of awakening that I've, in my experience, have seen often happen after a health crisis or a diagnosis or really at the end of life. I think that there's like a pivot moment, and I'm really passionate about documenting that for others. I live in Brooklyn, and I'm also a super crafty person, so I also do ceramics and Japanese indigo dyeing and any type of fabric textile art that I can get my hands on.
That's super cool. I didn't know that. I started getting into ceramics recently, but I only made two little tiny bowls, which is something. I use them almost every day.
Yeah, I can make bowls till the cows come home, but it's like addicting. I could just be in that studio all day, but then I wouldn't be making films. So I had to keep it as a hobby so film can continue to be my passion and career.
Yeah, when I started doing it, I immediately started thinking, oh, how can I turn this into a business? And I'm like, no, Lorena, no. Like, you also need hobbies that don't create money. Anyways, let's get into maybe if you want to tell us a little bit about how you became interested in end of life and filming these awakenings, moments of awakening.
Sure. So I think I definitely can, when I look back on my life, there definitely was a major seed planted in 2014. That's when I was diagnosed with a type of cancer. And for a 6-week period, they didn't know what type of cancer it was. So there was a 6-week period where I was, you know, just producing TV, trying to mom two little kids and thinking that I might die. And so I remember just being on the subway and walking around New York City, just kind of not knowing if this was it for me. After 6 weeks, after multiple, you know, different doctors with different opinions, the news came back that, no, Elise, good. This is good news. You actually have like a non-fatal type of cancer that requires this kind of treatment, et cetera, et cetera. And everything changed. Suddenly I was like so grateful to have this kind of cancer that wasn't as bad. But there was a moment, there was a pivot for me where I really felt like I came to a fork in the road and I could either be broken or I could be broken open. And I really leaned into being broken open, and it moved my life into this whole other direction of holistic health and healing. And I got Reiki certified, and I started documenting the stories of other people. I documented my father-in-law as he was dying, because I was so surprised by his absolute clarity and willing to talk about the end of his life so honestly. I joined a cancer support group. I ended up making a short film about a woman there. I just kept feeling compelled to document these stories of kind of awakening with the idea that there's wisdom buried just below the surface. But sometimes it takes the rug being pulled out from under you to really see what's important. And I don't want people to wait until they have cancer or till they're dying to wake up to their own life.
Yeah.
And so this cancer moment really shifted everything for me. And I founded a couple of years ago a production company called Mindful Films, which is dedicated to documenting these particular stories of awakening, because I want to reveal the narrative medicine that's within the stories for both viewer and subject.
Do you feel that the medicine, I guess, that someone could get from watching these things is comparable or not to what they can get if they themselves were going through a moment where they were about to die or they were faced with their own mortality?
Of course, I feel like we, as in the rest of us, right, we can all learn from these stories. And what I really want to do is inspire people to wake the F up to their life, to be honest. I think 99% of us are sleepwalking and we're just running in the same hamster wheels thinking we have infinite amount of time, getting in the same dumb old cycles with our parents or certain friends or our partners. And it's like, you actually don't know how much time you have. It sounds so trite, but every day becomes really precious when you didn't know if you had a lot of time. And so for me, there's actually this real thing called narrative medicine. Columbia University has a master's program in narrative medicine, but they really focus on the story as part of the healing process through writing and orally sharing. And for me, it's all about film. It's documenting people's stories as narrative medicine, both for them and us. So I actually spent many years as a producer on MTV's True Life, their documentary series. And I was a one-man band at the time. So I was a shooter, producer, audio, all the things. I would normally go out in the field by myself or with another producer or associate producer, and we would film these really intimate stories of young people going through really difficult moments. And I kept seeing again and again how my subjects felt seen and heard and validated just by us being there to document a difficult moment and holding space for them and their experience. And I kind of realized in that moment, like, this is actually my best professional self. And as much as I love supervising shows or seeing projects from beginning to end or being in post on shows, there's nothing like being in the field with people and being able to really, I think, bear witness to people during difficult moments of their life that has the potential to shake them up and make them really learn what's really important.
How did you end up doing that show?
True Life?
Yeah.
Well, I started off in TV. Honestly, I started off at MTV working on their show called Made, which was about an underdog kid in high school who kind of wants to become something outside of themselves. And that was a one-woman show. I would be in the field for 6 weeks by myself, shooting, directing, audio, producing, sending the tapes back, all the kinds of things. It was kind of boot camp. It was like MTV producer boot camp. And that was the first of many, many MTV shows that I worked on over probably a 10-year period. I worked almost exclusively for them. Although in my life, I've worked on with many different networks as well.
So cool. I was a fan of that show, True Life. And when I met you, I was like, what? That is the coolest. I mean, it's obviously the perfect background to what you're doing now. Okay, so tell us a little bit more about Mindful Films, what you've been doing with it or where you see it going, wherever you want to go next. And obviously, we want to get to the meat of the topic, which is, what was her name? Carol?
Yes, Carol, for sure. So, well, I guess I wanted to add that, you know, in my interest in documenting these moments of waking up, I really started being pulled specifically towards end of life. And last year in 2023, I took a year-long intensive course at the New York Zen Center called Foundations in Contemplative Care. And the program is all about really using these Buddhist principles more as like pillars of like a life philosophy to check yourself against, while in the context of bearing witness to other people's suffering, specifically at the end of life. And I absolutely loved this program so much that I'm even now in a second year program called Catch Your Mind. It helped me so much prepare for this documentary that I'm now producing and directing on end of life. I've also been a hospice volunteer for several years as part of the program, and I've continued that even though I no longer required, I finished the class, but I continue to see people once a week when I'm not shooting, when I'm here in Brooklyn.
That's awesome. Do you do at-home visits or like you go to a facility, a hospice facility?
I actually go to like a senior home and I see specific patients there that are receiving hospice services through the organization that I volunteer with. And actually one of them I made a short film on, but I never like did anything with that, but I did make a short film on my hospice care partner.
So when you do end up filming these things, how does it work? Do you look for them? Do they look for you? How do you both end up deciding, okay, let's do it?
That's a great question. I feel like I really use my own intuition as my compass. I really trust it. And so it's just a mix of like luck and good timing and the right match. So at the moment, I'm directing a feature documentary film called Riding Home. And this film follows horse trainer Carol Richardson from Vermont through the last 4 months of her life. Carol is this fierce, vibrant, wickedly funny 65-year-old woman who has terminal cancer and instead of, you know, dying with cancer, chooses to live with cancer. And she really confronts death and dying completely and directly and also with a really irreverent sense of humor. So Carol's really allowing us to bring death and dying out from under the veil, which I know is what we both have in common, and into the mainstream conversation. And she really makes it accessible to everyone. And so I was actually introduced to Carol through a friend of mine from the Zen Center program. My friend John Burt and I became friends and he saw my film on my hospice care partner. He knows I'm a filmmaker. And he was like, you know, I have this friend, Carol. She's dying. I don't know. Maybe you want to make a film about her. And I was like, okay, well, there's tons of people dying every day. I'm not going to make a film about everyone. I'm really particular about someone who really can carry a story. And Carol and I had a 3-hour Zoom in October of last year, and we just like absolutely loved each other. And from that point on, I then planned to shoot a couple weeks later, and we've been filming since then.
Are there certain criteria that someone has to meet, I guess, to be able to carry the story? Or is it just all intuition based for you?
For me, it's really intuition. So to be totally honest, when I first began this production, I thought it was going to be a short film. You know, I knew that this was going to be a short time frame. Carol had 6 months or less to live, so I knew that we only had 6 months, which is not a very long time. The story's taking place in Vermont, a 3.5-hour drive from Brooklyn. So I just knew that, you know, I wasn't going to be there all the time sleeping on her couch. I had to kind of pick and choose moments to go. And I felt like this is definitely a short film. But the more we started filming with Carol, everything we filmed was just infused with meaning and humor and like this unexpectedness. Carol, for example, planned her own birthday party, dead or alive. And she wanted her daughter to put dead or alive on the invitation. And her daughter was like, I think that's a little too far.
I love that.
You know, we filmed Carol visiting a glass blower with her daughter. And she designed her own glass urn to hold her own ashes. I mean, who does that?
Yeah.
You know? And she also had one working lung at the time, and she surprised herself. She was tickled that she was actually able to blow a small piece of glass that the glassblower then gifted to her daughter, you know, several months later. So, you know, I just saw with Carol that because she was so willing to face her own death so directly and authentically, she had this freedom, this ease that most people do not have. The people around Carol, her family or friends, people that weren't really as comfortable talking about it, kind of, I just noticed they kind of get like, you know, like everything gets kind of tight and tense. And that's the way most of us handle uncomfortable things. We're not taught how to sit with discomfort, sit with our own suffering. You know, we're not taught that in the society. So Carol, in dealing and facing her own death, had this absolute freedom that I think is something that we can all take away from that.
Do you think that her experience of her death or like the activities that she decided to partake in, for example, to prepare for it, do you think any of those things were influenced by the fact that you were making a documentary about her? Like, or were they all just things that she had planned ahead of time? And I don't know if being filmed going through it makes you have a different way of thinking about it, I guess.
That's a great question, Lorena. So I think at first, you know, it took some time for Carol to fully get what my vision was here. And it also took a lot of time for her and her family to completely trust me. You know, I think part of this interesting arrangement with Carol is that she knew she would never see the final film. That's part of built in to what we're doing here. She knew that her kind of passing and her final memorial would be really the end of the film and she'd never see it. So in order for this to really work, Carol had to fully trust me, and so did her family. And I felt like the more we went on with production, the more Carol just completely got it, to the point where her and I were an absolute team, you know. And Carol would text me even when I wasn't there. And she would say, oh, Elise, I wish you were here to film this. Oh, can you come tomorrow? I really wish you could film this. She started to realize how precious things were and how important things were to document. So she, I mean, I don't know how else to put it. Her and I were an absolute team, the two of us.
I love it. I love it. And when did she die?
She died on Friday, March 22nd.
Wow.
2024. Yeah. So actually almost 4 weeks from Friday.
So how much time did you spend with her total?
We started filming her in November of 2023, and we were with her the day that she died, March 22nd. So I guess 3.5 months or so. But we were only in Vermont maybe 6 or 7 times for multiple days at a time.
Did you just happen to be there the day that she died, or people kind of knew that it would happen?
We didn't know. So Carol was considering Act 39, which in Vermont is medical aid in dying. So we had filmed all of the steps for Carol to have this end-of-life option that she was strongly considering. And I do think that had she decided to do that, this could have been a slightly different film. But Carol kind of died before she expected to. I think she expected to live at least another month. We happened to be there filming on a Wednesday and a Thursday, and we were planning on leaving and going home Friday morning back to New York. But some things had changed Friday morning. Her husband actually called me and said it had been a really rough night. Would I be able to come over? Just me. So I said, of course. So I actually went over to Carol and Jim's house at 7 a.m. on that Friday morning. I called my crew to come back around 9:15, and Carol passed around 11 a.m. So we did not expect to be there, but actually it's exactly the way Carol wanted. She wanted us to be there, and we were.
That's beautiful. I guess I'm curious about like the ethical considerations that you had to have when going into filming something like this, be it with the person, family, how it's perceived, like all of these things.
Absolutely. I spent a lot of time talking with Carol and talking with Carol and Jim together about all of the options here. And for me, it was, I'm not doing anything that you're not comfortable with. Like, obviously, this is an uncomfortable thing in general to film, but I'm not going to film anything that you don't want to be filmed. So although Carol gave me complete carte blanche to film anything in this film, including her death, I made the executive decision that I was not going to film that moment. I didn't think that was necessary for the film, and I felt like that's a really sacred moment for her family, no matter how that looked and no matter how that happened. So I luckily did get to enact that decision at the time and not be, although we were around in the house, we were not there at that moment or immediately following.
Well, you're about to start doing the post-production. How do you decide what stays and doesn't stay?
That's a great question. So we've been in production for about 5 months, and we're probably 98% shot as it is right now. There's a couple of still small pieces that I promised Carol I would film after she wasn't here. I'm actually going back to Vermont next week to get those. But I'm not going to reveal what those are because they will be in the film. But as far as the edit, this is a whole nother creative piece of the pie. So it's one thing to be in the field and document all these beautiful moments, but it's another thing to have to really make these really difficult choices. So the way that post-production works is you kind of have to storyboard out first all of the scenes that you have and kind of think about, well, what for sure has to be in the film? You know, what's maybe secondary? In a feature, you have time to really allow other characters to evolve. So it's not just Carol, it's also her husband, it's her daughter, it's her son, it's her doctor, it's her best friend, you know? And so you kind of have to allow some time for things to play out. So all the fun is kind of just creating it in the edit, because I don't really know what it's going to look like. I know what the intention is. I know what Carol's wishes are, and I just hope that I could meet that expectation.
I'm sure you will. I'm more than positive that's why she chose to do this with you and decided to do it with you. So after you filmed her memorial, is that right?
Yep. So I think I mentioned she planned this epic birthday party for herself. So I was going to tell you a little bit about that.
Yes, please.
So Carol's birthday was April 18th. She was going to be turning 66. Sadly, she didn't make it until then. However, she planned an epic birthday party for herself, dead or alive. So I filmed Carol meeting with a cake designer. Her and her daughter met with this cake designer, and Carol felt really specific about cake. So she really wanted a lemon curd. She doesn't like carrot cake, but her son does. So she wants a carrot cake. Her daughter's gluten-free. We have to have a gluten-free option. You know, this tastes a little bit, you know, too sweet. I need it to be like a little more subtle. You know, she was real specific. So Carol picked out all the different cakes that she wanted, and she wanted a cake tasting and champagne party. And so because Carol passed away before her birthday party kind of naturally transitioned to be partially a memorial as well. And so we were there on her birthday filming this beautiful memorial that was kind of a circle of very close friends sharing different stories about Carol, which then transitioned into this celebration of Carol where everyone was eating cake and drinking champagne. So it was actually a really, really joyful time. On top of that, it had rained like here and there throughout the day, which was kind of a bummer. It was like, oh, why aren't we having a sunny day? But then, Lorena, as all the guests left and we were still there with the family, the most epic, humongous, full sky rainbow, like end to end, came out over the property. And everyone was just like, well, thanks, Carol. That's why you had it rain. We needed this gorgeous rainbow. So it was a perfect icing to the cake, really.
I love that. What are your hopes for the film?
So this film, so Riding Home, it's going to be a feature documentary. And my biggest hope is that this film goes through all the major film festivals. I hope this film gets a lot of attention, wins a lot of awards. Eventually, this film will find its home on a streamer or somewhere. Yes. I also think this film is going to have a whole nother life in the health and wellness field. This could be part of a hospice training film. This could be in my Zen Center Foundations class. You know, there's a lot of different lives this can have. But really, I think there's some films about death and dying out there. But I think what makes this stand out is that, first of all, I think I'm uniquely positioned to tell this story because of both my personal and professional experience. And I think that this just allows us a way in to talk about death, end of life, death and dying, you know, a way that makes it not scary. Because actually, this isn't a film about death at all. This is a film about life.
Yeah.
And living in the moment and making the most, truly living fully every single day in the way that Carol did.
Yeah.
So I got big plans for this film, Lorena.
I love it. I'm happy to be supporting your film and getting the word out there.
Thank you so much.
It's an honor. So was Carol like this before she confronted her own death, or it kind of shifted because of it?
That's a great question. So obviously I didn't know Carol before she had terminal cancer, but from what she's told me, you know, she's always been a very strong-willed, like Vermont horsewoman. Carol does what she wants. You know, it's kind of like, well, go with me this way or that's not going to happen. So she already was a very strong personality, very, very fiercely independent. But she herself said that getting a cancer diagnosis actually almost 3 years before she died, with a 3-year prognosis at the time, actually made her life better. She felt like in her marriage with Jim, they kind of couldn't quite, I guess, figure out their dynamic for many years. But when Carol got cancer, Jim became her full-time caregiver and really like shined in that position. Like he really found his purpose in the marriage and she could see it, you know, and their relationship became even better once she had cancer. She also felt like she was doing this cancer thing really well, you know, with each loss, because when you have an illness that's terminal, you have these different physical losses. So at first, Carol's kind of limping with one leg because she has tumors at her hip flexor. Then it starts to hurt to stand. So then she has a cane. Then a month later, she's using a walker. You know, so we're watching her visually progress. And I think with each loss or shift, for example, the amount of breath she could take, the amount of time she could sit on the horse to ride her horse, she really approached it in like almost like a plumber trying to fix a toilet. She was like, okay, so I can breathe, I can stand on the horse for about 10 minutes. Okay, so that means that I should probably plan, back it up, rewind about 15 minutes to get ready, and then 10 minutes. This, like, she was like this troubleshooter of her life. And so she never felt bad for herself. She never was like a, why me? She was always like, okay, what's next? What can I do now? How am I going to adjust? And how am I still going to get some joy in my day?
How has making the film with Carol, if at all, changed your perception on death and dying and your life? How has it affected it?
I mean, I think Carol's had a huge positive effect on me. She's very vibrant. It's hard not to want to be in her orbit. She's very magnetic. And you know, when Carol passed, you can really see and feel this huge loss in the family structure. And that's what I really have noticed in the last couple of weeks. You know, nothing can replace a person, but when one person out of four of a family passes away, everyone has to shift their dynamic to like figure out, how is this now going to work? How is this going to work with the three of us? And so that's been really eye-opening for me to see that. I also think Carol is just, like I think I mentioned earlier, but just this freedom that Carol has, this freedom and ease in her life. Who doesn't want that?
Yeah.
That's the way we all want to live,
right?
With this freedom and ease. And I've learned a lot through the New York Zen Center and studying Buddhism for several years, how actually contemplating your own death and processing your own death actually infuses a lot more presence into living your life now.
Yeah. Well, if at all, did you have to like implement some of these tools that you learned to be able to like take on this project? I'm talking about like more emotionally for you.
You know what's so interesting? I really feel like the Zen Center Foundations and Contemplative Care really prepared me for this film. That and all of these years of just being interested and filming my father-in-law as he was dying and having my own brush with cancer, I felt like I was exactly where I was meant to be. You know, I'm not afraid of being in chaos or conflict. As a TV producer, you're often just dropped in somewhere random in the States and just like, okay, you got to follow the story. It's like, okay, let's figure this out. So I'm good in that unexpected moment. I just figure it out. And in this, you know, what I really learned a lot that prepared me for this time with Carol is that, you know, to show up for people that are in pain or hurting or grieving, because her family had been grieving her while she was living, of course. It's not my job to fix it. It's not my job to give advice. But what I can do is I can just be with and abide by and just say, you're hurting and I'm here. And just bearing witness and holding that space is what really makes people feel held. And so I really got to practice a lot of what I had learned in the class through this film.
Is there anything that you want to share? Something else that you haven't gotten to share yet about the process or about Carol, or a question you wish I would have asked you?
I mean, making a film is very different from producing an unscripted TV show. This is a labor of love. It's only getting funded because I'm making the effort to ask people for support. You know, in TV, you have a salary and you produce a show or you direct a series or whatever, and then you have a certain amount of months and then it's over and then you get your next job. With this, it's up to me how quickly that I can keep moving forward, you know? And it's exciting and it's been amazing to kind of, you know, it's like I know how to tell a story really well. I feel strong about my storytelling skills, but this whole like fundraising, getting it out there is a new world. And I'm just like a sponge. I'm just like learning every day how to do this.
Yeah. In that case, tell people how they can support the film before I forget to ask.
Thank you. So we actually recently launched a Kickstarter on Carol's birthday, and the website to donate or to support our film is tinyurl.com/RidingHomeKickstarter. And basically, we're trying to chip away at the rest of the money we have to raise, but we're looking to begin post-production. So we're really looking for what's called finishing funds. We have most of the footage in the can, and now we want to start the edit and put together this beautiful story. So if anybody wants to support us, we're on Kickstarter. And we have lots of reward levels, one of which is going to be a handwritten note on my sleepaway camp stationery from me, one of which is a signed copy of a book by the monk who founded the Zen Center. So there's a lot of creative options to get people to feel engaged and excited about this topic.
Beautiful. Do you have like an estimated timeline or of when it will be released?
It really depends when I can raise the funds begin the edit, but I would hope that we finish it by the end of 2024.
Sweet.
So that in 2025, we can start the film festival route.
Nice. So after that, what's next for you?
Well, I'm actually in development on a death and dying series right now with a celebrity host that is going to explore death and dying in America. And I'm basically mapping out some episodes now, and that's in the works right now in development. I have a lot of big ideas with Mindful Films. So in addition to producing films and TV series around death and dying, I really want to create a training for other filmmakers who want to document end-of-life stories in their own life. It's kind of a training based on the foundations training I did at the Zen Center, combined with my TV producing and directing skills. I really want to create a crop of mindful filmmakers because I'm passionate about teaching people how to document their own stories within their own families.
Yes, me too. That's something that I've always wanted to somehow, I told you this. Yeah, I've always wanted to somehow be involved with something like that.
Definitely. And I feel like we live in a society that values like quantity over quality. Like as a mom, you know, you take like a million pictures of your kids. But like when we used to have 35 millimeter cameras, you would just take a couple of choice photos because literally the image is printing on the 35 millimeter film. And I really miss that intention. And I still use a 35 millimeter camera, actually. But I really want to teach people how to document their own families and friends in a way that's long lasting and meaningful and values quality over quantity. That's part of the big mindful filmmaking mission.
Oh my gosh. Beautiful. Cool. I want to know the titles to all the other films, like the short films that you've done too, if people want to check those out.
If people go to my website, which is mindfulfilms.org, they can link to several of the other short films that I've produced on Vimeo. Some are not released and some are private links, but there are a couple of things on there for people to see.
Beautiful. Cool. Anything else you want to share before I ask you the last two questions?
I think I just want to share that if you're considering documenting a story within your own life of someone dying or dealing with something difficult, it doesn't seem like the thing you typically would want to document. But trust me, it makes your people feel so seen and heard that it's like a gift to give other people to document a difficult moment in their life where hopefully there's some wisdom that's been revealed for them that others can benefit from.
Yes. Thanks for adding that. Love it.
Yes.
Okay, so last two questions. If you were to die tomorrow, how would you like to be remembered?
I would like to be remembered as someone who's generous and kind and someone who looked for opportunities to be generous and kind, someone who's present and really can make people feel heard and hold space for others. And I think I'm also a deeply creative person, and that would be fun to also be remembered by.
Okay. And if you could compile all the knowledge and wisdom you've gained throughout your life into a message to share with the world, what would that message be?
I would say that message is to wake up to your one beautiful life. As Ram Dass said, you know, be here now. Your life in this moment, this is all we have. So wake up. And also, as Glennon Melton Doyle said, an author, she said, we can do hard things. And so I think within the darkness is the light. So don't be afraid of going in.
Love it. If you enjoyed today's episode and need another dose of death, dying, and the afterlife, subscribe to the podcast. And if you want to follow along on the gram, you can find me on Instagram @conversationsondeath. Until next time.